702. Weird and wonderful. Sean O'Connor is my guest, producer of a podcast called How to Die. Sean, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate your time, sir.
How's it, Aubrey? Thanks for having me, and hi to all your guests.
Dying is a very ominous subject. The very discussion of the topic gets people all riled up, and already I'm getting sorts of scriptures sent to me and so forth. How do we have this conversation without the politics of religion?
Well, what you're doing is great, Aubrey. People don't find it easy to talk about death and dying. So the fact that you are making that the subject of your show seems to be of great benefit to people, because I believe it's something that will really help us live well if we can bring death into our lives and have these important conversations with each other. But it's not like we're encouraged to do that. So it is difficult, yeah.
I suppose it's obvious as to why we wouldn't be encouraged to talk about death, because it's a scary subject. There's a finality to it that we have no power over. You know, when you're dead, that's it, man. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. And I suppose that's why people tend to avoid the subject, because, you know, when it happens, it doesn't matter what your opinion was, it doesn't matter what religion you were in, what political party you are, what color you are, it has happened. But what are the conversations we should be having, given that reality?
I don't know. I mean, what are the conversations you have in your family, for example?
I never do, Sean, and I don't know, and I don't know whether that's something that's, you know, general reality. But I tell you, I'm not afraid of dying, but I'm afraid of how I could die. I suppose that's one conversation I've had at home, that I'm scared to be mangled in some accident and then have to, you know, live another 2 days. But those are about quality of life. But I'm not really afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of the next chapter of this thing called life, if indeed there is life after death.
Right. Yeah, I think that some people do think that just talking about death could be fatal. And you're almost tempting fate if you speak about it. That, you know, the Grim Reaper has a keen ear and is listening carefully to our conversations. And if death comes up, then you're kind of bringing it a little closer. In fact, you're tasting what it might be like and bringing that pain a bit closer, because it is scary and it is painful. So, so we love people, and we don't want to lose them. We don't know how we will be without those people in our lives. So these are the things I think that pushes death away. The other huge thing, though, is in the last, say, 50 years or so, the rise of medical science has really robbed us of valuing death in our communities. We've sort of outsourced death to hospitals and care homes, and death has become quite unfamiliar to us. So I think that's made it even more difficult to speak about, because we're not that well acquainted with death. Just a couple of generations ago, most people would have seen a dead body. You know, by your 20s or 30s, you would have seen at least a dead body or two. But depending on the community that you live in now, that's possibly a rarity. So I think there are lots of reasons why we don't speak about death. And my mission really is to try and normalize it. We're designed to die. We're designed to become obsolescent, if that's the right fancy word, but lose our faculties and head to the grave. That's life's design for us. However, we seem hell-bent on avoiding it. Because life can be wonderful, and also it's something maybe we don't want to lose. I think there's a whole range. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
When talking about death, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about the end of life? Or are we talking about the considerations of the end of life, and perhaps even issues around what happens after death. What is the fundamental content of that conversation in your experience?
For me, thank you for the question, and thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really a great honor.
It's a great honor having you on the show, Sean. Thank you.
No, really. Yeah. Thank you. I feel that conversations about death quickly turn to life. And, you know, when I tell people that I do a podcast called The Heart to Die, I've also done a lot of, they're called death cafes, where people gather, often strangers to each other, and acknowledge their mortality. There's no small talk, but it tends to focus a lens on how we live. And these conversations are massively life-affirming. So it's really about how do we want to die is a useful conversation. Do you want to be kept alive artificially? Do you want to be fed when you can no longer take solids, for example? What is the, some people are writing what's called an advanced care directive because they don't want their life to be artificially prolonged, especially if they're in a lot of pain. This also feeds very directly into the very topical right for a dignified death movement, which is being in the news a lot lately, the release of Sean Davison from House Arrest. So the kinds of conversations that I find are most useful are how do we live? How do we live? How do we honor the lives that we are losing? How do we care for people who might be facing a life-limiting illness, for example? When people start speaking about the afterlife, in my experience, it's really a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that when people have these conversations, often people's eyes tend to glaze over and they wait until the person's finished telling them what their conception of the afterlife is so that they can talk about the here and now, what's happening now in life, now. Because, as you know, there's no guarantee that we'll be here tomorrow, none whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who can say, I will be alive next Monday.
Yeah,
with any degree of absolute certainty. So death really does focus attention on life and how to live it. And that's what's been so vitalizing for me in this endeavor.
Because I think where exactly in the continuum of the discussion around death we decide to locate our conversation is very important. Because as you say... Because as you say, we can really go down the rabbit hole of what happens after death. But then we need to shift into a slightly different gear there. That's the gear of faith, perhaps, gear of near-death experiences, or that's a slightly different conversation. But it appears to me that the conversation prior to death is just as seminal, just as necessary.
Well, yeah.
In much order for us. So, yeah. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, much more so. I mean, I've interviewed wonderful people on my show, or the show rather, who speak from a Hindu perspective or an Islamic perspective or a Christian perspective. And it's interesting to hear what the conception of the afterlife is.
Yeah.
Or even a Buddhist perspective. But, and that helps promotes tolerance and understanding, I believe. It's good for our nation. But as far as practicalities go, and mom, where's your will? And dad, have you got a will? And have you signed your ex-wife out of the will yet? Otherwise, she's going to get your car and I'm not, kind of thing. Those are practical conversations that we could be having. I really do appreciate the way you're trying to frame the conversation and bring it into the present. I think that's where it can be of most benefit.
But maybe it's because there is an existential curiosity about what happens after this very final thing happens.
Yeah, so I was recently, I got a call out of the blue from a palliative care doctor at a hospital in Cape Town. He asked me if I would come and see a young man who was about to die of cystic fibrosis, which is a life-limiting illness that he'd had diagnosed since a young boy and lived with his whole life. And it's not what I was planning to do that day. I went to the hospital and I met a young man who was so terrified to close his eyes in case he never opened them again.
Yeah.
And was experiencing what we call existential dread at not knowing what was going to happen. And I'd like to just say that none of us know, because no one's come back and given us a PowerPoint presentation on what does happen. And I think we have a right to feel terrified because we don't know. I asked my mom the other day, well, I told my mom about this, and she said, well, I'll just go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And I thought that she was equipped with a lovely way of understanding it.
Yeah.
But you bring up something that really does animate people's fear, and I think a large part of that fear is the love that we have for the people around us and wondering if they're going to be okay. And wondering if we've done right by them.
Yeah.
Is there any unfinished business with our loved ones? Will that be okay? But, you know, but while we're chatting, it seems that every case is different and it's difficult to generalize as well.
Yeah. One of the most interesting moments in the discussion about death was with, you know, the great Hollywood actor Keanu Reeves, you know, the guy of, you know, John Wick, Neo on The Matrix, you know, that guy. And a question was asked about death. He was asked the question, what do you think happens after death? And he sat quietly and contemplated the question. And he said, very simply, that, well, I think that those that loved us will miss us.
Yeah. That's pretty apt. I know my dad is playing doubles with Marilyn Monroe somewhere in heaven on a grass tennis court. Because that's what he told us.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think we are veering into the hypothetical. And that's great. I mean, When you were trying to frame this conversation and saying, let's please keep your scripture to the side, it did make me think that, you know, religion and spirituality does provide a great comfort to people.
Yeah.
I was talking with a neighbor of mine earlier this afternoon, and I told her that I'd be chatting with you and your listeners this evening, and she said, well, I know where I'm going when I die. And she meant heaven.
Yeah.
So that's a great support to her. I don't know.
Look, I agree with you. And really the reason why I tend to sort of dread the religious conversation is because it's political, right? It becomes about I'm right and you're wrong and there's no one righter than me. And then it has all sorts of unuseful sort of directions that it goes into, and that's sad. I'm happy to have religious conversations when I'm in a religious setting, because okay. Then the you know the rules are almost agreed upon in that space that we are all going to say yes at these. It's nicely choreographed, so I'm happy to. But this is a secular setting. And sometimes the agreements that you would have in a religious setting don't really count here. They don't really aren't valid in this space. But as you say, the comfort that is provided by some of the notions we find in religion can't be ignored when talking about death, yeah?
No, absolutely. In chatting with a Hindu priest recently, he was describing the process of reincarnation. One really gets a sense that there's a belief that you must live life well And if you don't, then you're going to get another chance in your next incarnation to make amends.
Yeah.
And climb the ladder again. So these religious schemas really do provide a good foothold for people, and I think they're necessary. As societies become more secular, we have things like the How to Die podcast coming out and death cafes, because the church isn't holding these conversations for us as we've moved away from organized religion. So it's an interesting discussion, and it's good to be part of it. So thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So give us a call, 011-883-0702. What are the issues that arise for you as you think about death? And to what extent does the conversation about your inevitable death enhance your life? In other words, is the conversation about death necessary? I found that when we do have the conversation about death, it almost amplifies our appreciation for life. I'm interested to find out whether that would be the case for you. Has that been your experience, Sean, that when the conversation about death is had, the appreciation for life is that much more amplified, and why?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's because when we speak about death, we are breaking a little taboo. And that feels transgressive. It feels liberating.
Like smoking in the toilets at school.
That's correct. It feels a little naughty.
Yeah.
So, for example, when I hosted, my father had heart disease the whole time I was growing up, and I was always petrified of him dying. And I realized that his mortality cast a kind of shadow over my life. It encouraged me to live quite a fatalistic, carefree life, because I thought death could come at any time. And I also grew up in Joburg, and there was a lot of death around near the M1 where I grew up. And I decided to host something called a death cafe after hearing about them happening in the UK. And I contacted the founder. And I was a little apprehensive. I thought, you know, people think it's going to be morbid, and I think it might be morbid, and what's going to happen? And he said, no, just close your eyes and listen. There'll be so much laughter. And there really was. In fact, one table burst out into song. They realized they all knew the same childhood song in French.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just those evenings, talking about death was so life-affirming. It was always about how we want to live and how to use the undefinable time we have left to best effect.
Mm.
Which relationships deserve to be fixed? Which times we need to spend with people we love? I remember someone saying that her and her mom were not going to continue the expensive, pointless chemo treatment, but go on a holiday to Japan together rather.
Mm.
And, you know, those kinds of things were just wonderful. So, yeah, very life-affirming. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I want to take some calls, but Tsepo Modega on Twitter says, Aubrey, it is unfortunate that this is something we cannot talk about because we cannot contextualize it, and it shall remain foreign to us. It's amazing because it does not care about rank in society. If we remove the concept of religion, it's simply the end of life. I wonder how foreign it is to us, Tepo. Since the beginning of time, death has been with us. What might be foreign to us is our talking about it. But death is by no means foreign to us, I think. Sean?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, ever since we lived in caves or wherever prehistoric man lived, we've needed to deal with the dead, to dispose of the dead. We formed rituals around the dead as we've returned them to a spiritual realm. Death is part of life. It's not the end of life. I believe that we die a little every day. My skin is shed, my blood cells die and regenerate. as I grow older, so my faculties get lost. And to think that death is something foreign that happens at the end of life isn't really giving it its due. Nature is perishing and regrowing around me as well. This is the world that I live in. So death is part of life. And I think, at least for me, once I've realized that, I've felt more alive. When I hop on my scooter to go and get milk at the shops and I leave my kids at home, I know that some idiot could drive through the stop street and take me out.
Yep.
And my kids might get a call. And there's no guarantee I'm going to come home. So I can't actually leave the house on bad terms with them.
Yeah.
Which is lucky for them because I've got an Irish temper.
Yeah.
But those kinds of things bring, you know, bring life into focus. So as you say, an awareness of one's mortality. And many great philosophers and people much wiser than you and I put together have really found the key to life is almost, I think it was Eckhart Tolle who wrote The Power of Now, saying is to die twice.
Yeah.
Die and then live your life properly, what remains of it. So, you know, it's about bringing death into life, very much so.
So join us in this conversation on 011-883-0702 in our weird and wonderful feature. My guest is Sean O'Connor, a man with an Irish temper, he says. And I'd love to hear your anecdotes, your conversations, your thoughts about death. Do you talk about it? Is it something that you're scared of? And those of you who have had, asking my listeners to join us in this conversation, Sean. But yeah, maybe you could answer that question too. But is it something that you're scared of? Are you afraid to talk about death? And why? Why are you afraid to talk about death? And those of you who have been thinking about this over the last 30 minutes since Sean and I have been talking, is death foreign to us? Is that a foreign thing? I think not. But I want to take some calls, Sean, and let's speak to Anonymous in Kagiso. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, Aubrey and Sean.
Yeah, go ahead, Anonymous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Aubrey, I think death can be a release to me because this is what happened to my family. When my father passed on, it was about 32 years ago.
Yep.
To date, my brother is crazy. And you know what is my wish? Is for him to pass on so he gets a release. Because I should think he is dead while he is alive.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom is alive. If she passes on before him, who is he going to be a burden to?
Yeah.
So he's as good as he's going to rest and follow the man that he is grieving for. For 32 years, he never lived his life. I think it is a relief.
And you found that is the
peace we can get as a family and for him as well.
Sure. Now I get that, but are you certain that the grief is for your dad, the death?
It happened immediately. The minute we were told my dad passed on, he reacted differently even at the funeral, and he lost his job. He left everything. He destroyed everything that is material. To date, he is not okay.
And the conversation in the family that would be, I suppose, frowned upon in some circles, that you are even saying perhaps it's time death came now, not only for himself, but you as a family to get relief. How's that conversation?
Who says that? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
His mom says, I wish he passes on before I do.
Yeah.
So I can also go and rest in peace if I leave as well.
Wow, Anonymous. It's a hard conversation.
It's so sad, probably. But I do think death is a relief.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks very much, Anonymous in Kagiso. Sean?
Yeah, that is a really hard story. And grief is, I think it just robs you of life. So it's just hard to hear how profoundly that death has affected that family. And it feels like things have really compacted there over time. Yeah, and it's almost like the unspeakable wishing for release from life. That's really taboo, a very taboo thing to say. But one can understand where that comes from.
Good friend of the show's, Muhaile, writes to me and says, he says, it's that thing we can't do much about, Aubrey. It's there written in on our scroll. So it will come to, it'll come when it does. In a manner it chooses or chosen for us. So let's just drink and be merry, says Mughail. And I suppose that hedonistic impulse in the face of the inevitability of death, the futility of anything that we could do to try and avoid it, I suppose that hedonistic sort of impulse is understandable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've thought, what if I had a very limited amount of life left and I knew it, what would I do? as younger people, we might have wanted to do something quite different to what we want to do as older people. But eat, drink, and be merry sounds like a pretty good formula for joy.
Yeah.
And someone said, we're not here for a long time, but we're here for a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand that. Personal thing. It depends on your priorities.
Yeah, yeah. One of the movies that really, really brought that to me, just from a movie's point of view, was that classic with Morgan Freeman and The Bucket List? I think it's called The Bucket List. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I think it touched on so many different themes around mortality and death and what you do and what perspective you take on it when you are thinking about death. And I thought it was a very, very liberating take, at least from that movie's perspective, that it's something that you live life to the fullest. And I suppose that's what we were talking about, to say, you know, when we really have these conversations, it really amplifies the appreciation for life.
I think we're lucky to have these stories in the media and in culture and popular culture that we can fasten onto. But there again, I urge people to have these conversations in their families. There's on the How to Die website, there's a list of links, and one of them is to something called the Conversation Project.
Yeah.
And basically, it gives you a step-by-step guide about how to converse with usually an older family member about what their final wishes might be. So my brother and sister and I got together and conducted this experiment with my mother. And it was remarkable. It was so good for us to understand how my mom was so at peace with the idea of dying and said she'd had a wonderful life. And she told us how she'd like to die. She told us who she'd like to speak at a memorial service for her. She told us she wanted to be cremated instead of buried. All of these types of things help us avoid the kind of complicated grief that Anonymous described in her family, perhaps. And I think the more we talk about it, the better we can process the loss of someone. And process is a horrible word to use, I take it back, but incorporate that loss into our life and the way we're going to carry on living. And that's another reason why we need to not just watch the movies, but talk about the movies with the people we love.
Yeah. Let's talk to Mariah in Rivonia. Hi, Mariah.
Hi, Aubrey. Thank you again for a lovely and very interesting topic. Aubrey, I don't know if your guests will be able to shed any light, but something that has sometimes puzzled me. I've got friends who are completely, I wouldn't say agnostic, but they're completely non-religious, you know. So, and when... this person died, his wife had died previously, and apparently she used to appear to him, you know, to the point where it bothered him, and he said, please don't do this anymore. And as I said, this person was completely not religious at all, or, you know, believing in an afterlife. So I often wonder about these things, but when I wonder about these things, then I think of others who say that there is reincarnation and, you know, you're going to come back in a different life or what have you. And then I think, where, at what point does this spirit go into another life and stop appearing to another person or stop counseling you or stop, you know, the culture in South Africa with like ancestors. Do the ancestors never move on then? Do they never have like another life? Is it like they're always hovering there?
Ancestors get a life. Is that what you're saying? Ancestors need to get a life, man.
I hear you, man.
Thanks very much for that call. Much appreciated. And again, I suppose that goes into the realms of what we believe as far as death is concerned and so forth. But interestingly that I had a conversation, Sean, with the very, very well-renowned Aubrey Machitli, who is a sangoma, but also a very, very, very well-respected political analyst. And part of what happens, he's a sangoma now, and his title is Gogo Aubrey Machitli. Now, Gogo is the feminine of grandparents, right? So Gogo is the feminine. I remember asking him the question, what's up with Gogo? I mean, you're a guy. And he said, he said, one of the things that we make a big mistake about, Aubrey, is that we still use the referencing of issues that are beyond death with the psychology and thinking of life.
Right.
Suggesting that we make the mistake of thinking that the other side, as it were, is beholden to the rules of this side. And that's when he explained to me that, no, in fact, his spirit guide is female. And hence he takes up the title of Gogo instead of Mkulu, as it would be expected, because he is male. And I thought to myself, perhaps that's an invitation for us to think differently about death. And what happens after death, that perhaps it isn't as we understand things on this side of the line, as it were. Does that conversation ever come up in your conversations?
No, I think it's really just beyond comprehension. And maybe we don't have the words for it. I don't really know what to say. I mean, I do feel that we are veering into the hypothetical and the metaphysical. And I one of the episodes that I had was with a woman who practices as a sangoma. Her name is Lindy Dlamini.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. So your caller mentioned the spirit life, the spirit world. In my conversation with the Hindu priest, I discovered that cremation must happen very quickly after death because the spirit hovers near the body.
Yeah.
We want to destroy the body so that the spirit isn't tempted to re-enter the body and wake it up again. There are all sorts of flights that one spirit might take. But those are for people who are much more spiritually literate than I to describe. I do identify as a spiritual person, and my spirituality is very important to me. But when I'm privileged to be with someone who has got those words, it's just good to listen.
Yeah.
To show up and to shut up, really.
I like that. Hey? I like what you've just said now, that it's just good to just listen, to show up, and to shut up. Because, the next step in that is agreeing or disagreeing. Sometimes we don't have to burden ourselves with that at all, do we?
Mm-mm. So there's this desire to explain things, to put labels on them. But when I have been with people who are at the end of their life, to show up and shut up is really the best, for me, the best way that I can support that person and perhaps help guide them towards the questions they need to ask themselves or they want to ask themselves. But not to tell the person, no, actually, heaven doesn't exist, sorry.
Yeah.
That's not for me to say. Yeah. Or, you know, whatever, those types of things.
The burden of certainty, hey? I love that. Just show up and shut up. I could learn a lot about that, Sean.
No, me too.
this person says, thanks for a great show. At 83, I know I must be responsible now that on my death that everything is organized by me. Family all emigrated, so this is a necessary for peace of mind. Yeah, there's just some spelling, some grammatical issues there. But I think the person is saying that at this point, at the age of 83, it is time to basically make sure that your matters are taken care of, yeah?
Yeah, your affairs are in order. Don't want to leave a mess in your wake. The Swedish have a practice called death decluttering.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you throw out all your old journals and all your old shoes that are mildewed at the back of the cupboard. And you can start tidying up now because it's going to be time to go at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And some people think it's not really for others to tidy up their mess.
Mm.
Unfortunately, many people don't think like that. And some friends I know have been really burdened and saddened by the messes that have been left behind by people who've died.
Yeah.
So
Cormo on Twitter says, what's the importance of hope in dealing with the inevitability of death? What hope must we have to deal with death? Must we have hope, Cormo? Sean?
I think maybe just to put that into the context of a life-limiting illness where hope is what animates, you know, people's vitality and makes them believe that there's a way to beat this, to not die prematurely. I think hope is important. My father, who was a physiotherapist, often described two patients with the same affliction, and one of them would recover, and sometimes the other one would die. And he put it down to an attitude that the person had who recovered, that the person who died lacked. So I think hope is an important thing. It can be misplaced or misguided. I think that doctors and nurses also need to be frank with their patients. They sometimes don't want to deliver so-called bad news. And these conversations about life and death aren't just confined to families, but can happen in other contexts as well. So as someone who used to devalue hope personally in my sort of carefree youth, I've come to realize that it is. Without hope, life isn't really worth much.
Yeah. We have a saying in isiZulu that says, "Ithemba liyaphilisa." It simply means that hope gives life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's really, I suppose, what you're talking about now, that when we are perhaps a little younger, full of life and the exuberance of youth, we don't really need that kind of hope. But I remember last year I had COVID. And I was in hospital for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And that period really helped me realize that I don't have to win. Yeah? I don't have to win. There's no need to always have to win, right?
Right.
Which connects me very nicely with the idea of just showing up and shutting up. Because sometimes That's what gives hope. The understanding that maybe I don't have the answers, but it's okay. and what that did for me is that it really helped me pass through that existential dread you were talking about earlier on. I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid to die because I don't know what I worry about my wife and kids, and I worry about maybe the pain I might feel, but I'm not really afraid to be dead. You know what I mean?
That means that you've had a good life.
I have. I've had a very, very good life. I have still got a very, very good life. I have an unbelievably beautiful life. I have a miraculous life. So I think that's probably why I'm not afraid of death. But I do dread, I suppose, you know, being in a bad car accident or a slow, you know, sort of painful death. But no, I'm not afraid of death. And I think that has to do with really facing the reality of one's mortality. Have you had that experience in your conversations?
Many times. I think, you know, there's a palliative care doctor in the UK called Catherine Mannix, MANNIX. She's written a lot about palliative care and death, and she speaks quite eloquently about what many people say is, I want to have a good death. And she basically just says, look, first have a good life. A good death will be impossible if you do not live well. And by that, I don't mean, you know, living with abundance.
Creature comforts, sure. Yeah.
So in fact, the founder of the Death Cafe, John Underwood, believed that consumer capitalism and buying things to feel alive robbed us of the experience of death and pushed death further away. And sometimes when I'm in Canal Walk, I think, shucks, this is a temple of death denial. You know, it's buying things like crazy here. I don't feel that many people who are at the Black Friday sales are very aware of their mortality, for example. Sorry, I've gone a little off track.
I love this topic because it helps us go off track.
Yeah.
I think staying on track is overrated, Sean. <You know?
laughs>
Yeah.
Yeah, no, big time. So I forgot the question, but you're absolutely right. As a death cafe, and people can look up, it's at deathcafe.com.
Yeah.
Anyone can host a death cafe, and I urge people to consider hosting it. It's a very simple protocol. It's not a grief or bereavement counseling session. There's no speeches or pamphlets allowed, so no one has to be clever. You ask people one question: what's your name and what brought you here tonight? And people sit in tables and chat, and there has to be cake. That's the other rule. There has to be cake, because cake and partaking of cake together is a ritual that only the living can enjoy. That's why there's always cake at a death cafe. But the conversation goes...
Oh, you should add some Cook Sisters in there, Sean.
Aubrey, I've heard the craziest things, eh? Yeah. Wow, I've heard such crazy stories.
Yeah. Listen, I want to end off this wonderful conversation, Sean, and I hope we can have some more, with a message from Martin Coleman on Twitter, who says, maybe speaking about death takes away its proverbial power and demystifies it somewhat. Because humans need certainty, and the mystery of after death is scary enough, says Martin Coleman. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, takes away the sting, makes it familiar, and it still will come as a surprise.
Yeah.
So before we go, I must give a shout out to the people who contact me through the How to Die website. I love hearing from people. I love getting emails. There's 16 episodes out already. Everyone from a tombstone maker to a forensic pathologist and undertaker. It's it's been an amazing couple of years chatting with people who dance on the edge of death in one way or another. All the episodes are free to download. They're also on Spotify. And AvBob have also provided a lot of support, and I must just acknowledge them because I'm less grateful for both of them. So,
Sean, I want to thank you once again for joining me in this conversation. It's been both revealing and comforting at the same time. And thank you very much for such a brave conversation. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, ta-da. Sean O'Connor, producer of the podcast called How to Die. What a great conversation.